Hey community, thanks for tuning in. We're a couple of friends who love collecting toys, specifically G.I. Joe, and this is our conversation. You're invited to join us because this is the Order of Battle.
This episode might be a little longer than our others. We're trying a new thing, just like we said we would in our last episode, so let's just jump into it. Alright Joel, since the last time we talked, I'm still messing with the schedule a little bit, so that A and I can both get our work done during the day and still have time to go out on walks and things like that. To that end, one of the things that I got in, something I had been waiting for a little while, I got the Crossfire Delta. So now, A and I on our walks, he's taking out the Alpha, I'm taking out the Delta. Sometimes we're switching it up. We're driving it around the neighborhoods. It's become a lot of fun, and he is building storylines based on the characters we're bringing as we're going on our walk. So not only are we just riding RC cars that happen to be G.I. Joe, but we're also building a world as we do it. This includes some of the other things I got in, which... handful of figures, right? But the big ones to note are 94 Gears, 94 V2 Techno Viper, a handful of scrap irons, as he's really into scrap iron right now, and he's using them as scrap iron and the Iron Vipers, which I think is kind of a neat thing that he's doing, so I'm all into it, as well as, you know, a couple more his tank drivers and an updraft. So that has been our last couple weeks. What about you?
I got another box from TMK, which is almost a two-a-week thing at this point. This one was more or less a bunch of fodder bodies. He got a good pile of the Dollar General blue shirts, so I've just kind of been buying them, you know, however many he has at a whack for sale. And like I said, the bodies for custom, and kind of like the star of the box was I got another of the club's Toxel Viper. So now I have two Vipers. Honestly, I think I've lost count on the Toxel Zombies. Let me rephrase that. I have not lost count because there's a mass amount. I have lost count because I've been getting them in faster than I can keep up with. So I think I have like five or six. But the big thing I got in is not G.I. Joe related. I have multiple drum sets, and I ended up trading one to get a new one to me. So I had a modern kit in the last 5 years that was made out of acrylic, so it was clear. And I traded that towards a set of drums from the 70s that are also acrylic, but they're black acrylic. They have a different, little bit of a different size setup. I didn't really have any intentions of doing that, but I am definitely happier with the drums I wound up with. You know, I'll keep them around as long as I like them, and then if I get over it, I'll pass them on to the next guy.
You said there was a little bit of a size variance. Are you still doing the jazzy setup that you were doing, or is this a more standardized?
Well, this is like, the best way to describe it is these are John Bonham sizes. It has a bigger bass drum, but it's from the 70s, so it's shorter, which is what I prefer. I like vintage drums, classic sizes. But yeah, this would be more of like your 70s prog rock set. And I mean, on top of that, it is like, you know, it's clear black plastic, looks crazy. I'm already pricing out an additional drum to go with it. I have to decide how bad I want that additional drum because it is very expensive.
What about the green Japanese drums?
Still have those. Those I will never get rid of. Those are on the jazzy side. That drum set will never leave my hands unless I'm dead. Because you'll never have an opportunity to buy that kit again. This kit, I don't think I'll ever get rid of either. It's in incredible shape for drums that are somewhere around the 45 to 50-year-old mark. They're from, he said, early 70s. You can trace the serial numbers to within a couple of years. So, like, they're getting up there. They're in fantastic shape. I went over to this, an acquaintance of mine that has like a little vintage drum shop. I always just like to bop in and see what he has. I went over there, didn't even know he had this kit, and like kind of like found it by accident and was just like, like so infatuated with it, left without buying anything or talking to him about trading anything, and I just kind of like thought about it, and then I texted them like an hour after I left. I went back Saturday, got the drums, had some fun reconfiguring my setup at my practice space. Then I started pricing out the additional floor tom. We'll see how that goes. I can tell you I'll probably end up getting it. I don't know when, but like I said, it's very expensive. But also, I have a pretty mild achievement. I beat Super Mario Odyssey today.
Congratulations. How many sunrises did that take?
I have not looked at the hours log yet, but this is kind of my first deep dive as an adult into actually playing video games outside of just fooling around on a couple games here and there. And I think it's going to help me with the other games because the Mario franchise are definitely a lot more forgiving and geared towards kids, or I guess beginners. So it was easier for me to kind of get my bearings playing that, and then I can apply hopefully this new set of skills to playing Breath of the Wild. I have to say, the storyline or the premise for this game is like insane. The game starts with Bowser kidnapping Princess Peach and like going to all these different kingdoms, like collecting things to force her to marry him.
Wow.
You know, as Mario, you go to these different kingdoms and you have to beat off his goons. You build your way up to fight Bowser. And this is the part that like kills me is so like I beat Bowser, and then in the Mario Odyssey game, you have like a companion who is a hat. It's like a ghost of a hat that takes over your hat, kind of. So you can take over things is what I'm trying to get at. So you beat up Bowser, and then you throw your hat at him, and you become Bowser, but with a Mario hat and a Mario mustache. It's a little weirder. So then you pick up Princess Peach, and you have to run through this level that's exploding. And you do all this. It thanks you for playing the game, or you beat the game. It starts kind of playing some movies. And then it has this weird switch where Princess Peach is standing there. Bowser comes back too, and picks up like a handful of his little flowers, like his like Venus flytrap flowers. And then Mario picks up a flower and they're both like trying to give her the flowers. And then she gets annoyed that these two guys are like fawning over her and then acts like she can't decide, but I don't know what there's to decide considering Bowser just kidnapped you and you acted like you were a hostage.
Sounds kind of creepy from the jump.
The game is amazing, and I would recommend anyone who has any interest in playing it. It was a lot of fun, but like the storyline's a little weird. That's pretty much all I got slash what I've been up to. So let's dive into the meat of the show, and I'll kick it to you to start since I just ran on for a few minutes.
Recently, A has been asking me about master sets. Specifically with G.I. Joe and with Mask. And Mask, we're pretty close to a complete run of the vehicles, but I wouldn't say we're anywhere near a master set. With G.I. Joe, which is so much bigger, we have a lot, but we don't have anything close to what one could consider a master set. But in talking to him about it, and in talking with a number of decade plus Joe collectors, the term master set seems to mean a basic thing, but the details are extremely varied and nuanced. I have my own opinions on it, but this has been a big topic in our house lately, and because of that topic, we sat down and did a full organization and catalog of the 13 Aura years. 82 to 94 of what we had in our play collection and what we had in our display collection. As we went through this, we were sort of going through and saying, all right, 82, we don't have anything in the play collection. 82 isn't playable, not anymore, right? But for 83 through 94, we went through everything and we would say, CoverGirl, A has one in the play collection. Do I have one in the display collection? It's not a his or mine, it's all ours, but we're just going through in that sort of manner where I have the display collection with me and he has the play collection with him and we're both going through. And then do we have two sets of equipment? Do we have a cut card? Do we have a full card? But as we go through all of this, I am questioning more and more how much I even want to go down a full run path, and then questioning why I wouldn't want to. And then if I am doing a play and a display, do I need two sets of equipment or only one? It becomes this never-ending discussion in the community and in my house. And so I pitched it to you because you have a different style of collecting than I do, not just modern versus vintage, but in how you go about collecting as well. Now I'm just going to get to the point where I'm rambling unless you jump in.
So just like you, when I jumped back into collecting G.I. Joe, I had an idea of what I wanted to get versus where I am now. And it's always evolving, it's always changing. So in my early days of collecting, I had a short-lived goal of getting one of everything from the modern lines that I liked. The more time I spent with the figures, I quickly realized that I had no interest in having a complete 25th run. I did not have a interest really in having a complete run of almost any of them. I just kind of decided I would buy what I liked. And then once I started seeing photos of army builders, it was game over. So, I don't really have, a master set mentality when in terms of my collecting. But I mean, even within that, I do have complete runs of, a handful of the modern lines just because I've come across them and bought them all. But it was never necessarily an intention. Kind of have the advantage and disadvantage of not having the same nostalgic connection to certain things as the generation before me does. The G.I. Joes that I actually played with as a kid are middle years, and I have my childhood collection in a bin under my desk. Doesn't really bring me anything to open it up and look at it, and that doesn't mean to come off in some super snooty way because the middle years or whatever. It's just I have fond memories of playing with G.I. Joe and watching the G.I. Joe I was able to watch. And I find that kind of same buzz and excitement when I'm getting these super articulated and super detailed toys from the modern line. Yeah, so my style of collecting, I kind of built it to never have an endpoint. Realistically, I have no intentions of having an endpoint until I lose the joy that I get when I find a figure in the wild or at a show or whatever. Like, in terms of the master set discussion, yeah, I don't really have anything in terms of a mental checklist of having a master set. I basically just figure out what I want next, and then I hunt it down. Money is still money. Like,
Speaking of that, in terms of seeing everything as obtainable, so long as you have either the time or the money, it's going to cost you one, sometimes both. Do you subscribe to the idea of the Holy Grail? Do you have a Holy Grail? Is that something that even enters your collector consciousness?
Kind of similar to the master set thing. Like, when I first jumped in, I had ideas of what might have been a Holy Grail or what might have been this. But the more time I spent collecting and everything else, what I'm going to say might sound snobbish or whatever, but like, just understand I'm not an extremely wealthy man. So I don't mean this in terms of money means nothing. But in the modern side of collecting, most stuff is obtainable. It just, like if I have to save, if I have to skip out on buying a handful of army builders or fodder bodies or marauder stuff, whatever it is, like if there is a modern figure I want, for the most part, the price tag, is on the lower side of a rare vintage item. The stuff I collect sits at a lower price tag because it's not 40 plus years old. But yeah, I certainly don't have a Holy Grail. I generally the stuff that I want even, shifts focus too. So like if I were to give myself a Holy Grail or describe something as a Holy Grail, it would probably be based more on finding something at a crazy good deal or finding something where you wouldn't necessarily think to find it. I'm interested to hear what you have to say because your side of collecting is filled with crazy rare figures, crazy rare variants, foreign figures, everything else. What do you make of the Holy Grail phrase, item, situation, however you want to call it?
When I came back to G.I. Joe Toys this time, my holy grail at the time, and I did use the term holy grail, and I did feel it because it was super emotional and even a little bit of anxiety, not in the bad anxiety way, but like that nervous energy of excitement when you think about it, was the 83 G.I. Joe headquarters. That whole lesson of everything's attainable. Early on in joining the community in one trade deal, I ended up with two headquarters. So that was kind of that lesson of calm down, everything's out there, it's going to be okay. And then my holy grail was like everyone else's, the flag. It took a month. I beat the pavement. I was new in the community. So I didn't know, I didn't have the connections, I didn't have the people, right? But, you know, within a month, I had that flag. So after that, the term holy grail sort of stopped being part of my normal vernacular, started to lose its luster a little bit. And I have friends that hate the term, think it's overused, like minty, whereas I still see it very much as an emotional thing. Although I do understand those who see it as if it takes less than 15 years to get an item, it's not a holy grail. I see both sides of that coin because everything is available, even the stuff that is crazy hard to find, at least domestic, right? Now, you want to get into the foreign conversation, that's a different story in terms of the everything's available. Maybe everything's available, but you need to have good contacts, good backdoor conversations to get anything beyond the basics without a lot of luck. I'm certainly no authority. I've not been in the toy game for 20 years.
Since we're the Art of Battle, let's look at one of the pages. If you have the comics, we're in issue 4 from May 1987, page 7. If you have the trade, it's on page 24. The Cobra Mamba. In my opinion, the Gyro Viper is a pretty good pilot for the Cobra Mamba, and he looks pretty good. If you have a Skydive and a Gyro Viper, Skydive is basically a Gyro Viper, but the head is different though. On to talking about the Mamba. It's like the Mamba's pods. It's got dual guns, like it can hold barter missiles, and if you have four extra pod missiles, those tiny missiles that are on the pod, you have like 15 missiles or something like that. Something I don't like about the Mamba, when the pods are off, it has no guns. It's just a single preference. I like the color of the helicopter itself and the pods, because my favorite color is black. So the pods are pretty cool. The Mamba has two tails, which is pretty cool. I don't take the missiles off the pods. One, I can't. And two, I don't want them to break. And I like the red canopy and like the instruments inside. They're pretty cool. I like the instruments on the cockpit, like the targeting or something like that. I like to call it targeting stuff. I'm like, how do the rotors not bump into each other when they're spinning? Another thing, I got my Mamba from Santa. I have two Gyro Viper helmets, but three Gyro Vipers, which I wish I had three helmets too. That's my Mamba, the vehicle itself. I like this thing a lot. I'm like, what the? When I look at the weight of this thing, 17,100 pounds. I'm like, how's that thing even stay in the air? I bet the Tomahawk weighs like 30,000 pounds more. I like how it's designed. I wonder who designed it. Because I really want to meet that person, even though they might be dead. I liked the amount of detail they put in to the Gyro Viper, the helmet, the pods, the entire Mamba. That is so much detail. I like it a lot.
You know, through all of this talk, we're just two perspectives, and we collect in completely different ways. So we reached out to a handful of collectors who have been collecting actively for 5, 10, 20 plus years, and asked two questions. The first question, the term master set seems to be nuanced for each person, so how do you define what a master set is? Is it even possible to gain? And if so, how do you accomplish such a goal? The second question we asked, the term Holy Grail gets used a lot in our hobby, our lifestyle, and our community. So what does that term mean to you? Do you use it in your collecting, or is it an overused term? So everyone that answered this interpreted these two questions differently. And while there are some pretty strong similarities, there's also a lot of differences in how these terms were answered. All of this is opinion. No one here is an authority. But it was important to get more than just our perspective in this. So you're going to hear from a handful of people, in order, Thomas Kimple, and then Tim Meese, followed by Danny Soler, David Croft, and our very own A. After A, you're going to hear from Mahalik, then Skamoski, Mark Kelly, and H3. We hope you guys enjoy hearing from these guys as much as we did, and I hope that the next hour brings value, or at least thought, to your own collecting.
That is a fantastic question, and one that I think a lot of us have discussed and debated and talked at length about. So first, let me give my thoughts on what a master set as it relates to G.I. Joe means. So in my opinion, a master set is one of each of the figures that was released between 82 and 94. That also includes major variations. And then the same applies to the vehicles. So you got to have one of each vehicle from each year and then any major variations of that vehicle. Now, that's where it gets complicated, though, because what is considered a major variation? There's some widely acceptable variations that everybody knows exist. There's Serpentor and there's Yellow Neck Serpentor. There's Duke with different types of sleeves, right? Those ones are obvious. People understand that. We all agree on what some of those variations are. But then you can get really deep into that hole, right? I see posts in some of the Facebook groups that we're a member of all the time where people show something that I never realized was a variation. Hey, the belt is a little bit different on this. Or this one is Taiwan. This one is a country of origin of Hong Kong. For me personally, I don't get too deep into that. So first and foremost, what I've been working towards is I want each of the figures from each of the years. I don't know, I counted it up once upon a time and I had maybe 550 figures or so in my number of figures that you needed to get the master set of just the figures. And I haven't even done a count of the vehicles because my collecting goal in terms of vehicles is just getting the ones that I had as a kid or that I really like, not even ones that maybe I thought was cool as a kid, because I keep discovering more and more vehicles that I think are awesome, right? So you and I have talked a little bit about this, Jason, of just where I came into G.I. Joe collecting several years ago with my sights set on, hey, I want to get the figures I had as a kid, which grew into, well, let me get all of the figures from 82 to 87, which grew into, well, let me go through 89, which grew into, hey, there's some pretty cool 90s figures, to, you know what, I got to get them all. And so now there's Mega Marine APCs in my collection and Street Fighter vehicles and things that I never knew existed until a few years ago. So My goal is to get one of each of the figures across all of the years, and then collect the vehicles that are most interesting to me. But in terms of what I think someone would have to do to claim a master set, I think they've got to have one of each of the figures, one of each of the vehicles, and then those major variations that people all recognize. And if you said at JoeCon or Joe Fest, hey, this is a variation, most people in the room would say, yeah, that is a variation. I know what it is. It wouldn't get a response of, what? That, I've never even heard of that. Talking about Holy Grails, I'll say this. It's a term that I don't use a lot because I feel like it's thrown around a lot for just things that are maybe expensive, right? And expensive is a relative term. Right, I can buy something that's $100, and that may not be super expensive to me, but someone might spend $100 on a nice Storm Shadow and say, I finally got my Grail, right? And that doesn't fit for the definition for me. For me to be a Grail, it has to be both difficult to locate and significantly expensive. Relative term, though, what's significantly expensive? I think it's got to be something where you're putting, if not hundreds, thousands of dollars into it. So when I think about my collection, some of the stuff that I have that was more difficult to find and that I spent a fair amount of money on is or some of the UK Tiger Force figures and some of the Brazilian Tiger Force figures I have in my collection. Some of them were difficult to find in that it didn't pop up the first couple times I plugged it into eBay or dropped a message in the Aura group about, hey, I'm in search of a minty UK Blizzard. But they took some time for me to obtain, and I did spend some money on them, particularly the UK Blizzard and some of the Brazilian figures I have, like the Arpuro and the Brazilian Shipwreck. I can't think of the names for those. Marubo, I think, is a Brazilian Shipwreck. Those cost some money and those were tricky to find, but I still don't think I would call those Holy Grails. For me, it's got to be something that I'm looking for and I just can't find it. And the only example I can think of is I was on this kick a few years ago about how I wanted to get all of the figures that were a variation of a US example. So there's a UK Marauders Lowlight that is almost identical to the US Marauders Lowlight. It has just a couple differences. The paint applications are a little bit brighter. The rivets are not painted, they are painted on the UK version where they're not painted on the US version. So it's subtle differences, and there's a number of figures that fall into that category, and I was chasing all of those. And I discovered that one you just can't find is the UK version of the Crimson Immortal. I think they used a Saw Viper head on it as opposed to the traditional head that they used in the United States. As I understand it, they cost several thousand dollars. And I've literally never even seen one on eBay. I've never seen one posted in the groups that I can think of. So for me, that sounds like a Holy Grail, something that you're going to pursue for years and you may never actually find. I can't think of a whole lot of domestic items that I would consider grails just because most of them are fairly available. Even some figures that I dropped a lot of money on recently, in working towards completing my master set of figures, I got a hold of a Goldhead Steel Brigade figure. It's a figure I've been looking for a long time. It's fairly difficult to find complete with the pack, with the patch, with everything that I wanted with the figure. But again, it's not impossible to locate. There's almost always a few of them on eBay. They just weren't at the price point that I thought was fair. So Grail, it's got to be really, really hard to find. Like, you don't see it very often. And you're going to be shelling out a mortgage payment if you're going to get a hold of it. That's my take on it.
I never really thought about chasing a master set until recently, and my views on it are kind of, you know, I don't really care if it's carded or if it's loose. As long as I've got all the parts and pieces, I don't necessarily have to have the file card, but if I have the file card, great. I'm down to 15 figures to have that 82 to 94 run. You know, I started doing this in about 98. For me, having that every figure between 82 and 94 is kind of a big accomplishment. I mean, there's literally hundreds and hundreds of figures, and to hunt down every accessory, thousands and thousands of accessories, it's kind of surreal, you know? Like, man, I got 15 figures and I've got that whole run. How do you define that accomplishment or goal? And I don't know if I can define it. I just know that going through it and the patience and the time invested in looking for and searching for and finally finding some things is amazing. A lot of pieces I stumbled on, being in the central Midwest, North Dakota, Minnesota, South Dakota areas, it's a hunt. I mean, you have to have a network of people, a network of friends, people pointing in the right direction, finding moms and grandmas and people that have toys in their attic. But I never really started pursuing it until probably the last year, because I was getting so close to having a master set. To me, I guess that master set doesn't need to be, you know, some people go, oh, it's got to be carded. And some people are, oh, I want it all loose, you know, D9 or whatever. I just want a decent figure. This can't be a beater. The joints got to be good. The paints has to be good. Has to have all the weapons, including the stand. File card, not necessary, but love to have them. And I don't include vehicles in my master set. You know, I have a lot of vehicles, but there's some that I just don't care for. Not really my bag, you know. I like to find figures that are tough to get, you know, and find them over a long period of time. I never had that. I don't know how to put it. I guess I never had that urgency, like I have to have it right now, until probably the last few months. I actually have a list. I've never had a list. I have a list of what I need to get to finish what I would consider a master set. And I'm kind of proud of it. You know, it's something that has taken years and years and years. Some people just go throw money at it and that's all they do. And then they get all the figures and you can do it. You can do it in a year. You can do it in 2 years if you just want to dump unlimited amounts of money on it. For me, it was always more about, you know, hey, I grew up with this guy. He's got a buddy that he works with. His mom's moving. He's got all these toys from when he's a kid. Hey, I want to go visit this guy's mom. Is that possible? You know, that was how I built my collection, was through a network of friends. And over the last probably 4 or 5 years, that network has grown tremendously because of Facebook and groups. And they've helped me continue keeping my collection going. That's about what I have for you on the master set. But a grail piece for me, I never really had a grail piece. Like, I have to have it. It was always the hunt that made me excited. It didn't matter if it was a bazooka or a create a cobra. It was whatever I was finding. So I guess I kind of look at the grail as something that never really stuck for me. And I know some people are like, oh, I'm looking for a flag. And some people, it just might be figures that they had as a kid, or the figures that they wanted as a kid never had. So I guess for me, that's the term Holy Grail just doesn't really resonate for anything on any toy line. It's a term to me that gets used way too much, but it just doesn't mean anything to me at all.
For me, a master set means that the figure has absolutely no flaws and it's literally fresh off a card. So it's as if I went to the store, bought the figure, cut it open out of the package, untouched, unplayed with, not displayed, and left it alone forever in time. That's what I would consider a master set. A flawless specimen. The only true way to attain that is if you were in your 20s, picked up doubles of every figure as they were released. So you pick them up at the lowest price point possible. And then you began to separate your collection as a sealed and then a loose, never played with example. And then protected them, put them in storage, climate controlled, obviously, and then shared them to the world, you know, whether in a publication of some kind or, you know, 3D Joe style website. I don't consider my collection a master set. I have many of my childhood figures in my collection. And if they have a little bit of paint wear here and there, I think it adds to the charm. I'm not such a stickler that it needs to never have an elbow crack, because even some carded examples have elbow cracks. So in my opinion, that's null and void for me. It doesn't, I don't have to have that in my criteria in my collection that if a figure has an elbow crack, that it's no longer suitable for display purposes. I would very much like figures just to have tight joints, as long as their face isn't mangled up and no pitted areas where maybe got gouged or one pet peeve of mine is, say, the weapons. I don't like to see chewed up weapons where a kid constantly put it in, put it out. And then you just see that flaking, that I don't know how to describe it. But, you know, when they're really worn out, it does not look favorable for display purposes. So, you know, and I actually do put the guns on my figures. So that's another risky thing, because as plastic shrinks, now there's no give. So now you may have trouble taking that weapon out of the figure, but all my figures are displayed long term. So hopefully, you know, they're not going to break if I ever had to take the figures off their weapons. But I said, what's the point of displaying the figure alone? Then you have a box full of accessories, you know, somewhere. I don't know. I'm trying not to. I, at some point in my collection, I would like to not have any extras. Like if someone said, hey, do you have an extra of this? Sorry, I can't help you. I only have one of everything that I want. At some point, I want to get there. I am not a completist. So my idea of Holy Grails is mainly things that I always wanted to own. You know what I mean? So I do have a master list of things that I'd like to own at some point. And there's even things that I don't even have on my list that every once in a blue moon, a friend of mine will approach me and say, hey, I have this available. Are you interested? And in most cases, I wasn't interested, but because they offered it to me, I feel compelled to buy it. So there's a lot of Brazilian figures in my collection that I wouldn't have put on my want list. But he offered them, and he had like maybe 20 figures, you know, available. And I'm like, I'll take these 10. I never bought the whole collection, but I would buy as many as I could at the time. I am a big fan of paperwork, and I love to find the subtle differences. Like, why is there an H1 on the bottom right corner of a file card? Sometimes they had text variations. Sometimes they amended a file card or even changed it due to political, you know, correctness. So as far as all of those types of variances in the paperwork, I would love to have those. But I even recently discovered that, like, say, an order form may have had multiple years. So, for example, Steel Brigade, he had multiple order forms. There's not just one, and it was identical throughout the years. They changed. They had fat-sized cards. They had expiration dates. And then there's this weird thing where it has, like, this underneath your telephone number, there's, like, this in bold text, and it have the letter J, and then I have as high as 101. And I'm wondering if there's more than that. I have a few of them, and I have one that's J37. So is there a J01, and then did it go all the way up? And how often were they printing these out? So it gets nuts. Like, I'm trying not to get overwhelmed, because there are so many subtle differences between, like, promotions. So, for example, if there was a Steel Brigade promo on the front of a card, then the background color of the file card may be a different hue of, say, gray, or peach, or blue. And even Mailaways had multiple releases. Like Keel Hall has so many. There's a H1. There's a retail release, Redback. Then in 88, he was released. 89, he was released. I think he was released all the way up until 94. And I noticed that the file cards have subtle differences, including these little weird serial numbers on the bottom of the card. Right now, I'm missing the actual H1 of that particular card. Of the other ones I have pretty much all of them, but there might be more. You never know. So it's pretty interesting, but I'm not going to get too crazy with it, because I'll be, you know, in the dirt if I tried to chase every single variant paperwork. Like, it's just unattainable. Like, there's so many bigger collectors than me that have way more in terms of paperwork or background information. So you know what I mean? And even sometimes I surprise them with some of the stuff I find. So it's kind of interesting. Like, you know, sometimes you do have to help your fellow collector, try to be a helpful hand in this brotherhood of collecting. But my time is up, man.
I would start off by trying to define what a master set means. And for those who aren't aware of who I am, I primarily focus on G.I. Joe. So how G.I. Joe might look at a master set versus Transformers or GoBots or Lincoln Logs or Legos or something else, you know, all that's going to be a little bit different. The first time I ever heard about someone chasing or trying to achieve a master set was primarily focused around, one, G.I. Joe, but then also the other part of it was they were primarily focused on figures. But you can go as narrow or as broad as you want when you start thinking about a master set. So I'll give you an example. So for me, I've always been wanting to go after a master set of, which basically means, and all I care about really is 1982 to 1994 in figures. Now, I am a completist, and so I think about things probably a little bit differently than someone who might just say, I want a master set of figures, because I want also to have all the boxes, because the main reason I got into one of the big reasons I got into G.I. Joe is because I love the artwork, and one of the things that I wanted to get was a full run, which I would define differently, a full run versus a master set, because in a way, depending on what you're collecting would start to define what a full run versus a master set in my mind could be. So a full run could be, I have one of every figure, meaning you don't necessarily go after variations. Whereas a master set to me is talking more about every single variation or variation within those particular things. So for instance, when you get into collecting carded stuff, do you say a master set is every card variation? You get into offers and different offers that figure was packaged in. Do you look at things like vehicle boxes? So for me, I love variations. And so one of the things that I've been going after is box variations, which is kind of crazy. It's a thing that I have long wanted to go after. So for instance, what people may or may not be aware of is the Jump, the Ram, and the Flak all came out and had box variations. And what the box variations are there's two different sizes of those box variations. The first release of those are bigger boxes, which are actually pretty crazy when you think about it, because the bigger boxes are too big for the vehicle. So if you ever see one of the first release versions of a Ram or a Jump or a Flak, but primarily it's the Ram that really stands out. The Ram is like super small compared to the size of the box. There's like whatever they did and why they made that decision, I don't really know, but I find it kind of cool. Another variation, for instance, that I'm going after is there's at least two, possibly three versions of the Mobat box. So in 1982, they put out the Mobat and it came with a strain arm stealer, but then also they put out the Mobat in 83, which came with a swivel arm stealer. Well, there's also to be kind of rumored, kind of confirmed, there's another version of the Mobat that came out in like 85, 86-ish, and that is slightly different. The box, from my understanding, is the same, but technically the vehicle that came with it is a little bit different. I don't know how many people know Henry Kaufman Jr. and the variations and how meticulous he is about stuff, but one of the things about him is he recently has been exploring the variations of the Mobat vehicle itself. And so what a lot of people may know about is the machine gun tip is different for the 82 versus the 83. The treads are different for an 82 and an 83. Well, what he's started to find is there's a variety of other things that change from 82 to 83 to 84 to 85 and maybe even beyond. Things like the battery cover, the actual battery compartment, some of the details in the treads. I'm going down a rabbit hole, but basically what I'm getting at is It really depends on each individual how they would think about a master set or a full run. Because to me, what I'm trying to go after is I'm trying to do a master set of all the loose 82 to 94 figures. So I'm trying to get all the variations, the confirmed variations too. Like that's another part that people kind of get hung up on. So for instance, people may know that I have one of the 20 or 24 or 22 basically deep six with a killer whale, mint on card. Well, a lot of people would ask, should that be part of the master set? I wouldn't define that as being part of the master set. To me, it was never technically produced, but I've had people tell me that they saw it in the store. Now, whether I believe them or not, that's a whole nother story for a different day. But I am, for instance, trying to get all three versions of Copperhead. I am trying to get the versions that are somewhat acknowledged and recognized of Rakondo. I am trying to make sure that I get the 86 Mail Away original Adventure Team set that came with the collector case and their counterparts of their 82 and their 83 versions. But I'm not going as crazy as there are some paint variations on some things or some country of origin stuff that changes that I'm not necessarily chasing and I don't consider master set. I think if you really start to kind of pull back and take a larger view of what a master set means, I think it does depend on the toy line. I think it also depends clearly on the collector. I think also, did you start to look at and say, I have a master set of the figures, or I have a master set of the vehicles, or I have a master set of them in their packaging or in their boxes? Or I'll give you another thing that's kind of crazy, which is blueprints. So what people probably don't really understand is there is variations on blueprints, and those are not really well documented at all. And so you start to think about, well, am I going to go after blueprints and a master set of blueprints, whatever in the world that would ever look like? I don't know. I don't know anyone who's ever gone after that. I know some people who are big into blueprints, and I know they have variations. But I don't see anyone kind of striving to get a master set of blueprints. Just like, for instance, I think a lot of people would confess that they want a full run of file cards, right? So they'll want 82 to 94. But again, you start looking at file cards. There's multiple versions of some of the Dreadnoks file cards. Do you also get, for instance, you know, a gray file card and a peach file card for like Snake Eyes and other figures from 85? That's where, to me, it depends on the collector. I personally don't care about file cards. I don't go after file cards at all. I just pick them up as I buy collections or I, you know, buy a figure and it comes with it. And another thing is, like, you start to get into some of these other toy lines that are smaller. I think that's where, too, like, depending on the maturity of the collector and I think the experience of the collector and the amount of money they have and how long are they going to be in the game, they start to define master set or master collection or a full run a little bit differently. For instance, there was a time where I wanted every country's figure mint on card. Like, that is insanity. I'm never going to get that. Now, I wasn't going after, for instance, like every variation, but I wanted to have one of each. That was my dream. Now, that dream quickly, you know, withered away and died. Because you think about it, I mean, if Air Devin isn't going to get a full master set, master run of everything, there's no way David Croft's going to do that. One, it's almost unachievable. Two, I don't have the financial resources to do it. Three, I don't have the patience for it. And four, if everyone has ever seen and heard about Air's collection, you know how big it is. I don't have that space either. And I don't have the money to throw at collecting and holding that amount of stuff. And I just don't have the connections. But I think if you think about other toy lines that are small, you know, like you think about Ghostbusters, you know, there's things in there that collection isn't that difficult to attain. I mean, you have enough money, you can get the full master set of Ghostbusters. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that's on a different scale. Like, you've got 400 or 500 figures of what that line is like, and do you go after that? Transformers, again, like I said, I think it really kind of comes down to the collector and their resources. One other piece that sometimes I would include in the conversation is condition. So for me, I'm really picky when it comes to condition, and I care about condition a lot. And what I actually have been striving for, my will is often tested probably daily at least, is can I get every figure from 82 to 94 in mint condition? And I don't mean like it's just out of the package. Mint as in there is no flaws, there's no imperfections, the paint app was perfect, that kind of insanity of scrutiny and being meticulous about things. That's my dream that I want to have. But in this day and age, with prices going through the roof, not able to focus on it like I want to, I don't know that a C10 mint condition every figure is going to be possible. So that's another piece that I throw into the mix when people start talking about a master set, because I'm probably very close to a master set right now if I didn't care about condition. But I care about condition because I'm not going to put on display a C5, C6 beat to hell road pig. I have to go get a C9, 9.5 to put on display because I don't display anything that's not a 9 plus at least. Now, if I'm going to like play with them and I'm going to put them in vehicles and I'm going to drive them around and I'm going to like, you know, pose them and all that, then I'm not going to do that with my mint figure. But that's just a whole nother rabbit hole that we don't have to venture down. I just bring that point up that condition is one of the pieces too. And I think that's where, depending on the collector, they would think about that as a factor, because what you would want is you want it to be achievable. And, you know, most toy lines are probably achievable. For instance, original Star Wars at this day and age, that is so hard to do a master set, especially in high quality condition. And especially if you start thinking about variations and what those things cost you, you know, especially if you even start to attempt to do that carded, that becomes very, very difficult and very expensive. So that's why I just put the condition of the figure or the vehicle or whatever you want to include in there starts to play a factor, because you can get a master set, you can get a full run, whatever you want to call it, if you don't care so much about condition. I mean, I can go to the flea market and I can dig up, you know, half a run without too much trouble. Anyway, I feel like I've belabored the point, but those are the kind of factors, and that's the way I think about a master set when it all comes due on, for instance, G.I. Joe.
I'm not as much chasing a master set as wanting a master set. I have not, like said, I want to do this thing and it's a top priority. What I think a master set is, having every single figure, having every single vehicle, every variant, everything, everyone's equipment, all the variations. Well, basically that. There's a lot of figures in Joe's I love, and vehicles I love, but we don't have them. And I play with my Joe's, and I want to have, like, huge battles when I play. It's not a priority, but I like the idea of it, because I want a master set. That would take a long time, for one. I'm just saying that real quick. Just throwing that in. Really, you just go on collecting like us. You just buy stuff and you're like, oh, hey, I'm getting close to a master set, blah, blah, blah. I'm just going to buy more, blah, blah, blah. And then you get all the way to a master set, but still you are army building and like finding as many loose figures that you can, as you can, that are either army builders or people you don't have. Basically that. Yo, Joe.
The true definition of a master set is obviously every figure from the start of the line to the end of the line, which is, I forget the exact number. What is it, like 400 or 500 something figures individually? But G.I. Joe's a really weird toy line when you talk about master set versus other toy lines. The average toy line in the 1980s lasted 3 years. So you'd have a launch year, second year continued, decline year, toy line is gone. Whereas G.I. Joe went, at least the Real American Hero line, 12 years. So that's why you have so many figures. So from my perspective, let's rephrase that. If you're a completist, you want to go for a set. G.I. Joe's weird because you've got your guys that only want 80s. Got other guys that as we see now with another generation kind of come in, they like the 90s. They're into that stuff. So it's hit or miss for me. I've grown to like more 90s stuff, where when I initially collected, I was only going to go to 1987. But then you keep finding more and more things. It continues to grow, and it's weird what a master set is. Now, for G.I. Joe myself, personally, a master set is one of those things. If it happens one day, great, but it's not something that I am actively out there getting. As most longtime collectors know that try to go for that, the years of 1993 and 1994 can prove quite challenging. Now, when you talk about another line, now I will say a line that I have, I'd probably say I have a master set of, is Masters of the Universe. Because my collection on that is that line ran from 1982 to 1987. So a lot less figures. I think there's maybe 60 figures in total, not including variations and other things. So that's a lot easier to obtain. Now, in my definition of a master set, are you talking about figures? Because you add in lines, you know, you have to get into vehicles and play sets and stuff like that. So my definition of a master set is like my Masters Universe collection, because I own everything that was released domestically, minus the Wonder Bread He-Man. So it's not quite there, but most guys will know the Wonder Bread He-Man is really hard to come by and is considered in the toy world as a great. Let's talk about a couple Hasbro properties in the 80s that weren't really successful. I'll talk about Inhumanoids and Visionaries. Both of these lines were released by Hasbro, the company that did G.I. Joe. Inhumanoids was 1986, and Visionaries was 1987. So that's smack dab in the middle of G.I. Joe's, when G.I. Joe was going strong. Inhumanoids kind of took the same approach. They had a cartoon behind it, and they released a wave of action figures. You got your four main good guys, smaller accessory monsters, and then three large monsters. And then you had two vehicles that came along with it. Very short run line. Figures were larger scale. So, and in terms of that, to me, a master set of that would be, being that it's only 12 pieces for the entire line, because it was only released in 1 year, a master set of that would be everything. Same with Visionaries, another toy line that, and the thing about Visionaries is they had almost identical articulation to G.I. Joe figures, except they were in a 4-inch scale and they had a hologram. And a master set for that is, again, there's 12 figures, four vehicles. There's one large vehicle in there that's kind of a grail of that set, which is called the Dagger Assault. That is extremely hard vehicle to come by. Even the driver from that vehicle commands high prices. To me, yeah, a small line like that that only lasts 2 or 3 years, a master set would be, you know, the whole line. Whereas G.I. Joe, you can split that up in so many different ways, with, you know, you're going to collect from 82 to 90, or you're going to collect just figures, just vehicles, and so on and so forth. My thing is, like, if you can't display it and show it off, what's the point of having it?
A loose master set, to me, is a complete run of everything made domestically from 1982 to 1994 by Hasbro that is considered G.I. Joe. I do certain major variations. Now, for me, a major variation has to be something that there was a decent amount of run with the paint, or it has to be a body part swap. For instance, I will count Copperhead in his different color gloves. I will also count the yellow neck Serpentor. However, I will not count the 50 different variations of Rakondo. I'm being a little bit sarcastic there. But, you know, if you really dig into Rakondo, there's so many different variations of his symbol, of his camouflage. And to me, that's just kind of the way it was painted that day in that factory, or how much paint was on the machine, or who was working that line that day. So I don't really consider that a valid variation. anything with body parts is definitely considered for me. So the different steel brigades, the different Stardusters, I count all those. I know some people go by date stamps. I do not collect any different date stamps. It's got to be a major paint variation or major part variation. That's how I consider that. I know some people in their master set, they will consider the thick thumb, thin thumbs. I don't go down that rabbit hole. I just, as long as I have one straight arm and one swivel arm of those figures, I'm good with the 82s and 83s. So one nuance of my collecting is that I do not recognize Street Fighter as part of the G.I. Joe world. I know when you look at, you know, the Belomo collecting books, Street Fighter is part of that. I know people have argued with me, well, if you look at the 90s Street Fighter figures, it says G.I. Joe / Street Fighter. I've never been a fan of Street Fighter. I just don't consider it as part of my master set. I just go 82 to 94 G.I. Joe domestic. Now, as far as the term Holy Grail that gets thrown around quite a bit, I do believe that in the community it's lost a lot of luster. There's a lot of times where I see Holy Grail thrown around on an item that is not hard to find. It's just expensive. Now, for me personally, and I'm not knocking anyone's definition of it, a Holy Grail is something that is hard to find. It's super rare, and you have to hunt and spend time trying to find it. It's not something I can go on eBay any point in time during the week and find one on there. Now, granted, it might be an astronomical price, but if every single time I go on eBay, one of those is on there, to me, that's not a Holy Grail. For me, the example of this is the USS flag. People will call it a Holy Grail. You can go on eBay at any point in time, and there's at least probably a handful of USS flags on there. I've ran into and acquired four of them over my years of collecting. To me, it's just not that rare. I've also tried selling. I'm currently trying to sell a USS flag. Something like that, I don't consider a grail item. To me, a grail item is something that's going to take you a long time to find. It's something that doesn't come up for sale. Examples of grails to me, the Falcon and Viper glider to me is a grail because so many of those got destroyed. How often do you actually see those go up for sale? And a lot of international items. Obviously, the Argentina 7, that's a Holy Grail. And that's actually one of my personal Holy Grails right now. I would like to acquire those figures. That's what I consider grails. Things that you can go years probably without seeing one for sale.
You know, for me, Holy Grail is a unique perspective based on the individual collector. I think most of us start out in the same place. So at one point, you know, like right now, there's a lot of new guys in the Joe. I think because of COVID and some other things, you know, sitting around with some time on their hands and the nostalgia kicks in, they see it. And I see 82 prices and 83 prices through the roof. That's where a lot of people start out. You know, that's the grail, a Zap with unbroken thumbs and mint condition. Well, once you get that, then you want an MOC Zap. Then once you get that, you start exploring the line a little bit more. You find out what a recalled roadblock is, so you want one. And then you got to have one that's MOC. Then you got to have graded figures. Then you have to have convention figures. And then you have to have foreign figures. You have to have variations. You have to have collector's club figures. There's a lot of accessories, those sorts of things. I've been down that path, and I think where I've ended up, and I know a lot of people will think this is a buzzkill, and this is, oh, that guy doesn't have any fun. He doesn't know what the true collecting spirit is. But to me, we're all collecting to fill a hole. There's some reason that compels us to go out and collect things to bring into our life. And what we're chasing, especially, so we're in this case, it's G.I. Joe products. G.I. Joe from the 1980s and 90s, specifically, a specific genre. What is it to me, the question I asked myself after I chased grail after grail after grail, I was chasing these physical, tangible objects. And as soon as I had one, okay, great. Then it was on to the next one. So there's always another grail. You're constantly trying to fill that hole. So what I came to is the conclusion of, okay, what is it I'm actually trying to fill? What do these things represent to me? And so I had to start asking myself questions. I'll ask myself, who designed this thing? How was it made? What's it made of? When was it made? Who made it? Why was it made in this particular way? What's its purpose? How was it marketed? The catalogs, all the paperwork, the ephemera. What does it tell me? What does that artwork do? who designed that artwork? Who painted that? Does it tell a story? You know, the variations, was it used for another purpose? That sort of thing. You know, it. And what I've found is the collectors who seek that path usually end up, you know, I mean, Ron Rudat is a great artist. He designed and painted a lot of the original figures. But what I don't think a lot of people know until they actually talk to the man or see a lot of his posts and stuff is a lot of collectors know a ton more about G.I. Joe than he does. Same with Bazigian, same with, you know, Hama. Hama designed the personalities of these things, but he doesn't know anything about how they were actually manufactured and the telltale stories. These things represent something to me now, the same with anybody else, but the grail for me is the information and the history and the why. I like knowing the why. It's not the tangible object. These are pieces of forensic evidence to me to be studied to uncover why is it that they represent something to me that I must have in my life. That's the grail for me. If I can uncover that secret, that's the genie in the bottle. I can unlock that why, and maybe I can apply it to other things other than just these figures that are 35 years old now and other pieces. So some people may think that's a cop-out answer, a lame answer, or buzzkill answer, because I know a lot of people think it's playing and trading. I've heard them say it. You know, honestly, it's like repro. I understand that some people like repro. To me, I don't understand it because it doesn't represent the why. You're not collecting these figures. They have no history or sentimentality or anything attached to them. They're a representation of something, but they're not the actual art item. So I don't understand what that bringing that into your life does for you. I mean, I've said 100 times, 99% of the time, we're the only ones looking at our collection, and we know exactly what's in there, so we're not fooling ourselves. But it's the study of them. It's the study of them. I even study the repros. It fascinates me how they do that. I love, some grail pieces to me are the customs. Those are unique pieces of artistic representation that people brought into the world that are different than even Hasbro. They were inspired, obviously. But for me, it's not the tangible objects anymore because I have a ton of them. Anybody who's been collecting more than a minute will tell you you can have absolutely like anything you want for any amount of money or time. And so I study them intently and in every way possible. And to me, that getting that information and feedback either from other people or the best ever. And I've done it a few times. You discover something that everyone else didn't know and you get to contribute back to that information pool and make other people aware of it. And maybe somebody else will be able to add that piece of information and discover the why. Why are we still fascinated by this stuff? Why? Why? That's my grail.
I guess a little backstory on me. I break everything down, collecting everything's relating to my childhood. Toys take me back to a period when you had that whimsical thing of walking into a toy store, seeing toys, and it takes you back to the 80s. I'm a child of the 80s. I was born in 80. I love the 80s. I love mall memorabilia. I love anything to do with the 80s, except for the cars, minus the Lamborghini Countach. The cars in the 80s suck. But with that being said, I love the 80s. So when I went about collecting, it all started with, I had some of my toys from my childhood. I had all my G.I. Joes. I had a few little odds and ends things. So I had to break down into how do I want to collect? I thought initially I want one of everything, but it's just not feasible to me because I love box art. I love the artwork. Once again, it takes me back to that childhood feeling. So I broke it down into what toy lines I like, and then subsections of that, what do I remember from the 80s? So to begin with, G.I. Joe, 1984 to 87 is my sweet spot of what I collected. So I made that a subsection of, okay, I want to get all of those toys. And as I started getting them, I started thinking, all right, there's some other figures out there that I like that don't fall in that. You know, the Baroness, Destro, just different figures that fall into that subset. I think as collectors, we're always looking, you don't just buy stuff to buy stuff, you buy it to reach a goal of some sort. So when it comes to how you collect, you have to kind of come up with something in your head of why or how you're going about it. So for me with G.I. Joe, it was the Sunbow cartoon. I wanted every figure from the Sunbow cartoon either carded or unused. One other little caveat, the way I collect is I only collect sealed or unused contents now, and that's because really, really good friend of mine told me that open toys are just someone else's childhood, and I don't want that. I want that back to going into a toy store feeling. So I don't want someone else's toys. I want them to be my toys. If I feel the need to, and I'm sitting in my toy room right now, bust these things open, I'm the first idiot to waste that much money, but I'm the first one to touch it also. Okay, so for G.I. Joe, it was I wanted one of everything of Sunbow. And these all have to be sealed or graded. I never got down the graded vehicle lines, so it was, I bought some sealed vehicles. And I was making pretty good progress on it. I bet I was missing probably 15 of them. And I think, and I could be way off, but I want to say I think there was about 90 characters, give or take 20, in the Sunbow cartoon. So I'm going down that path. And money's, of course, still an object, too. And this is back when collecting is not at the height that it is now. I wanted to allocate money to other things also, and I just wasn't getting the joy. I didn't have that toy as a kid. It doesn't bring really back any memories. Okay, I remember seeing it on cartoon, but let's be honest, the ones on the cartoon were badass. Some of those figures look like crap. I mean, it just the personal opinion, of course. But so I whittled it down to then G.I. Joe became my new subsection of I wanted carded versions of everything I had as a kid. So that eliminates G.I. Joe from being any type of trying to complete the entire line. But along with that, I have, as I look around, Ghostbusters, Transformers, Wrestling, Mask, Voltron, Starcom, Wheeled Warriors, Masters of the Universe, and Star Wars. So once again, I went into what subsections of those do I want? Ghostbusters. I want the cartoon. Once again, it all goes back to the 80s, the cartoon, the lifestyle then. In Ghostbusters, I actually have what I consider to be, for me, a full run, and it's the first full wave. So you have all four Ghostbusters, five ghosts, and then also you have Ecto-1. Ecto-2 was also in the cartoon, wasn't part of the first wave, but it was in it. There's a proton pack that I always wanted as a kid. I threw that in there. And then going into those weird and unusual things, Stay Puft. There was a special Stay Puft that was only released at Kroger's. I had to have it. I don't have a Firehouse. I had one. But just looking at it, it didn't bring back that childhood. I might get one again one day, but I consider that to be, to me, a run. Transformers, I went for a loose, complete version of every Transformer with a box with a rub sign. It was a lofty goal, and I got boxes for all of them. I'm like, you know what? These need to look better on display, so I despise reproduction stuff. I don't like anything to do with that, but I bought some reproduction bubbles, and in my heart, as I looked at them, I hated them. I threw the bubbles away. They didn't even go to the person who got it after me. And then I went down the sealed line of Transformers. Transformers is one of those unusual things where they can cost an arm and a leg or they can be a steal. I don't have nearly as many of them, but I tried to get a good collection of what I had as a child. Wrestling. In the LJN line, and I just recently got into it, but there's a ton of them. But I have to go back, okay, I remember watching WrestleMania, Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan, the body slam. I mean, it's just embedded in my mind. Other than that one WrestleMania, it was like watching on Squigglevision because we didn't have it, so I could hear it or whatever. So I went after, for a complete run of that, what I, in my mind, I want the six figures from WrestleMania. I got four of them. There's two left. One of them being Andre. I'd love to have a Blackstrap Men on card, but it's just one of those. I don't want to use the word grail because it's not really a grail for me, but I'd love to have it. Mask, they did four waves of masks. I broke it down once again into everything is in a series. So series one and series two, I have those, and then I have the ones I collected as a child. Voltron, no one really likes the enemies. I apologize if anybody watching this really likes the enemies. I consider that complete. I had an entire run of Jace the Wheeled Warriors loose, but a buddy of mine needed some of them, and at the time, I'd rather them go to somebody who really wants them. I didn't have a lot of connection to them, so I parted with that. Masters of the Universe, I was going for an entire run. And I got to within five figures and the little Meteorbs domestic release. Did not have any foreign stuff. I had everything. And then I ended up selling a good portion of it just because it wasn't bringing me joy. I'd rather have the money to spend on something else. And then the most recent thing is Star Wars. It's the one toy from my childhood that I don't have a whole lot of memories of Star Wars, the toys. I remember watching Return of the Jedi in the movie theater. I remember, you know, running home to watch them on TV. in the collecting of them, because you have figures that are on different cards, depending on if you go with A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, or the Power of the Force for the Lego line. One thing with my collecting is I only collect stuff, once again, it takes back to the 80s. So I don't have any New Hope cards in my collection because they came out before I was born. As I've gone through it, I'm getting really close. What happened was, and what got me into it, is there was a local shop that had 67 of them. Bought them all in one fell swoop at a good price. I mean, it was like a little honey hole. So I've just been filling in the others. So as I go along, I really do believe this will be the one that I complete. They're all mint on card, unused, untouched. I'm missing roughly about 15 to get to the magical 94 number. But as I collect them, they have to meet certain criteria. All the ones that I got in the fell swoop were all bought locally. They all have local price tags of stores that I shopped at. So the ones that I'm going to get as I go along have to have either no price tag or price tags of places that I shopped at as a kid. That's kind of my thought on, oh, and Turtles too. But Turtles, it was the 10 back. 10 of them came on the back. That's kind of where I went with that. And then a few of them I had as a kid. And to be honest, I'm just kind of now thinking about it. Like, I've thought about it a little bit in my life. Things that I'll never part with are my childhood toys. So, but Grails are something you're out there achieving, trying to find. The things that I consider grails are the items that you don't even know if they exist. There's things that I love, and there's been things that over time I thought they were grails. Like I said, I buy everything mint on card or mint in sealed box or mint contents. So a grail to me is a certain piece with a certain price tag. As I was going through, I mentioned earlier my G.I. Joe collection. I have in mind most all the ones I had as a child, all with price tags of places that I shopped at as a kid. You know, as I collect things, the price tags almost mean more to me than the toy. I won't buy a toy, no matter how good it is, and keep it in my collection if it's at a place that I didn't shop at as a kid. It's just one of those things, because just it becomes a toy then. It's not a memory. So grail to me is many things add up to an item being a grail, and I don't know if they exist. I picked up a Ghostbusters Proton Pack here recently. It's got a Toys R Us price tag. It's an item that I love. But if I found one with a Children's Palace price tag, because I remember walking in there, seeing it on the shelf, it was one of the few toys that I lusted over so bad as a kid but never had. That'd be pretty high up there of things. But the grail items to me are the memorabilia. As I look around, I have a customer pickup sign from my Children's Palace. I have an exit-only sign from a Toys R Us. I have some little odds and ends memorabilia that, you know, name tags from Children's Palace, KB Toys, Toys R Us from the 80s. A guy who was a higher-up at Children's Palace, his little notebook from their 1984 convention meeting. You know, these are things that I don't even know if they exist. I have a Toys R Us or a Children's Palace VHS tape. In my garage downstairs, I have two Children's Palace shopping carts from my local Children's Palace. I also have a Toys R Us one, but that was kind of easy to obtain because Toys R Us was here. Children's Palace closed in 1994. So to me, those grail items are the items that you don't necessarily even know exist. I have a Bubble Yum He-Man. Horrible car. I mean, the card back's all beat up, but it's my favorite He-Man because I have the letter that came as part of the mail away and the envelope. It's the things that literally take you back to the 80s are what I consider grail. I have Masters of the Universe store displays. There's four of them that go together, another big one. Those weren't necessarily grails because I knew they existed, but those are things that I really want. There's one more piece. I'd love to have it. It's not a grail, but it's something that I would really like to have. But as far as an actual single toy, I don't believe there isn't really one. All right, I have Soundwave tattooed on my arm. I love Soundwave. He was the one I loved as a kid. I have a graded Soundwave with a Kroger price tag. I remember going to Kroger as a kid and seeing toys, but to have a Transformer that came from a grocery store, that would be something that would be almost impossible for me to replace. So that is kind of a grail item. And I'm not trying to sound cocky with my next statement, but I've had and moved so much stuff over time that the only things that are constant are the unusual items.
To wrap this up, thank you to everyone who was able to take the time out of their busy days and evenings to answer these questions for all of us. Also, you know, thank you for those of you that we talked about doing this and it either fell off the radar or could get scheduled or etc. Even though we didn't get together this time, we have plenty of opportunities. So thank you for even just entertaining this wild scheme of mine. My hope is that this conversation helps A and I, helps Joel, and helps all of you guys in terms of us. You know, A and I went through and figured out what figures, what equipment, what file cards, and so on we were looking for. And after a couple of days of hard thinking, A decided he wanted to focus on Mega Marines first. So, you might be seeing some Mega Marines coming from us in our daily battle reports a few weeks from now. We provide our email address, Twitter, and Instagram at the end of each one of these. Maybe Master Set means something different to you. Maybe Holy Grail means something different. How do you go about accomplishing it? Or do you entirely skip those processes and collect in a completely different way? I'm curious. Let's end here. Once again, thank you for joining us in the Order of Battle. Thank you to Self-Help for our music and Rust for our amazing logo, which we just got stickers for. We truly do want you to participate in these conversations. It's why we have an email address. Email us at orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. Throw in on any of the conversations we've had, up to and including this one about master sets. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram. Twitter is orderofbattlepd, and we've been doing several daily battle report photos. Take a picture of your battles. Let us know what's going on in your playtime. And our Instagram is Order of Battle Pod. And hopefully, between these three things and this podcast, we can communicate with you guys more. Thanks again.
Cool.